Sunday House Call is presented by Robillard Hearing Centers. Hearingisbelieving.com.
From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall@cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 437. For this April the 21st, 2013, I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. And we're taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. Long-distance number is 1-800-580-2372. Encourage you to call early. It happens every week, every Sunday at around 5:15 that we get six or seven calls that come in, and it becomes very difficult to try and get all of you on, and your questions are excellent. And I like to spend time discussing and providing more in-depth information as opposed to just giving a, 30-second answer. And that's one of the things about this show is that I like taking the time speaking with you. And if you call in earlier, it gives us that time to do so. Now, I wanted to read you a label. And this comes from Dr. Yoni Friedhoff. He had posted this on his website, weightymatters.ca. And I'm just going to read you the label, and then we'll get into what this actually is. So the label has, and I won't say what the, it has an 800 number up at the top, and it says source of vitamins B2, B6, B9, B12, C, E, and iron for the maintenance of good health. Contains calcium and vitamin D to help in the development of bones and teeth. Recommended dosage for ages 13 and up. Drink a mixture of 1 1/3 teaspoons of this syrup added to about 230 milliliters of milk 1 to 2 times a day. And then it lists medicinal ingredients. And on the medicinal ingredients, it mentions all the vitamins and the concentration of each and the milligrams of each and goes through the entire list of that. And it also says, do not use product if plastic seal under cap is broken. Okay, so that's the label. When you see this kind of label on a product, what do you think it is? I mean, when it provides a recommended dosage and it gives you medicinal ingredients. Well, I may leave that for you just to think about, and we'll get in. Probably I'll probably talk about it more after the break. But it's very interesting in how if you were to see this label without knowing what the product was, what you think it is, and you can certainly give me a call and let me know what you think this might be. As it is listed, okay, remember it's a syrup, you add it to milk. It's 1 1/3 teaspoons. It's important for, according to the label, for the maintenance of bone health and growth and development. And it has all kinds of vitamins. And it's very specific about giving it to, in terms of dosing, for children over the age of 13, right? So that's essentially what it is saying, children over the age of 13 and up, that's what they're recommending it for. That's who to whom they are recommending it. So find that very interesting. Like to know what you think this might be. Don't go to the website. I don't want you to cheat. Don't go to the website. It's just an illustration of a point I want to follow through with towards the middle of the show. But if you do have, you want to take a guess at what that is, please feel free to do so. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is the number to call. And I will be getting into that and giving you the answer. You might be surprised about what this actually is. Now, on another note, this is from the BBC News. And you got to wonder, okay, if you are told that Scientists are examining parasitic worms that live in the guts of fish and want to know why they actually are doing so. Okay. What is the point? And we tend to think of, you know, what is the point of studying these things? Why are you actually taking your time and spending years of your lives looking at a parasite that lives in the gut of a fish? Well, you never know what you're going to find out unless you actually look at something. And in this case, this is actually really neat. On the basis of this particular study, these particular studies, they found that these particular worms cling on to the intestinal wall of the fish using cactus-like spines. Okay, they fix the skin. They literally hook in to a wet surface and are able to stay on that wet surface. You say, well, what's the benefit of doing that? Well, by understanding how these little spikes work, they were able to develop a super grip plaster for surgical wounds. In effect, it mimics what these spikes do on the worm and hook themselves into the skin. It's three times, they say, the creators say it is three times stronger than materials currently used for burn patients. And it's a team at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital. They've created a 4 square centimeter or 0.6 square inch patch, and also say that it could deliver therapeutic drugs through its tiny needles. Now, the way it works, most bandages, when you try and put them on wet skin, they just aren't going to stick, right? You can't make it stick. And for surgical wounds, if you use staples and stitches, you can help anchor these dressings onto the skin and also skin grafts. But what eventually happens is that the skin develops trauma and can get damaged. So what they did is this is Dr. Jeffrey Karp and his team, looked to this particular worm, a parasitic worm called Pomphorhynchus levis is the name of the worm. And the way it attaches itself to slippery surfaces, it uses a micro needle tip that pierces the surface. And then once it pierces the surface, it swells tight to lock into the tissue. And so this means that the needles cause very little damage when they go in, but achieve a maximum grip. So they mimicked this. They created these little minute needles of plastic with tips that are rigid when they're dry. But when they're inserted into the skin, they swell up once they pierce this wet tissue. And it allows the patch to stick to the skin, especially on wet surfaces, with minimal damage to the tissues. And when it comes to remove the adhesive compared to staples, there's less trauma on the skin, and the skin, the blood, and the nerves in the area, as well as a reduced risk of infection. And I think this is actually quite neat when you look at, I talked with Mark Sutcliffe earlier this week as well, on how scientists used the characteristics of tree frog feet and the surfaces of tree. When you look at tree frogs, they can climb anything. Doesn't matter what surface they're on, wet surfaces, dry surfaces. The design of the pads of their feet helped them stick to any surface. And they mimicked that and created a tiny robot that can go inside a person's abdomen and act as a second point of view to the surgeon who's looking at the tissues and looking with their scopes to try and do the operations. And so this, to me, is sort of the penultimate use of nature and how nature has used and created, on the basis of evolutionary processes, created all kinds of adaptations for various animals and species to adapt to their environments, and how by understanding how they do it, we can use, and now because we have nanotechnology and we have all kinds of advances in material science, we are able to mimic and recreate these structures and use them for our own benefit. And to me, this is the ultimate use of scientific investigation. It just is a really good story, a really good way to understand how people are applying these various sciences and creating devices that will help us with regards to healing and treatment of wounds and such. We're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we have Sandra and David, both from Ottawa. And we have lots of lines available at 521-TALK, 521-8255. Star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And also, if you want to give your opinion about or give your guess about what this particular syrup is that's for kids that has all kinds of vitamins for bone and growth and calcium and all this other stuff they take twice a day for over 13, the kids over 13, I'd like to hear from you. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
And right back to the phone lines, and a good afternoon to Sandra in Ottawa.
Hi. I'm calling because my mom got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a couple of weeks ago we had the official say.
Okay.
And she's going in at the end of the month for, it's not the operation, it's like the pre, where they check apparently if, I guess, her body's healthy enough for
mm-hmm.
the surgery.
Right.
Is that when they decide, because the doctor had mentioned something along the lines of operable or not operable? Because it's a tumor of 2 centimeters long at the head of the pancreas.
Yeah.
And so is that where she finds out if it's operable, or because they're doing this, that means it is operable?
It's a good question. Usually if you have cancers at the head of the pancreas, is nestled, it's literally surrounded along the top, the left side, and the bottom side of it by the small intestine. And it's called the duodenum. And in the head of the pancreas, you have several structures that come down to it. One of them is your common bile duct that mm-hmm. runs into the pancreas, and that joins up with the pancreatic duct, which releases the enzymes into the intestine. There's a small sphincter that the common duct between the pancreas and the bile duct, pancreatic ducts, come together, and they empty into the duodenum in that area, and they help with the digestion of food.
Okay.
Now, if you have a tumor in that area, it can make it very difficult when you remove that. If you to remove that area, you have to have enough of the duct left in order for that to remain, to allow the liver to drain and to allow the pancreas to produce the enzymes to go into the intestine. Otherwise, you can't really digest food.
Okay.
So your question can't be answered yet because I think they have, from what you're describing, I think they have to understand the extent of the tumor and how much it impinges upon those structures. If it's leaving those structures alone or if they can dissect away around those structures, it makes it much more favorable.
Mm-hmm.
But usually when you're in the head of the pancreas and you have a tumor, it does, especially pancreatic cancers, you have to do more investigations to see if there's any spread anywhere, if it has spread over to other nearby structures. How was this diagnosed? Did she have, was she jaundiced? Is that what was happening?
No, every time she ate, she had the sharp pain along
mm-hmm.
Her abdomen that went to her back.
Okay.
And she went right away to her doctor, like, complaining about that. So
right.
Then did a whole bunch of tests, an MRI, and then a biopsy. And after the biopsy, that's when we found out.
Okay. And according to the MRI, has there been any other, did they notice any other tumors anywhere else or any
no.
metastases? Okay. So they're likely going to try and figure out whether this is indeed operable. Hopefully it is, because it seems that it was, you said it was 2 by 2 centimeters?
It was, yeah, 2 centimeters, you said.
So that's relatively small. She may be one of the lucky people that just on the base, because usually pancreatic cancer is caught very late.
Okay.
Because there's usually no symptoms with it.
Okay.
And so, the end stage is people get jaundice because it blocks up that duct I was mentioning that comes from the liver. The bile duct, and so you get jaundice because the bile can't empty out through your intestine.
Okay.
And so you turn yellow.
Okay.
So the fact that it's a small tumor, that it just sounds like, from what you're describing, that it's very earlier on in the process, she may be able to get that surgery and survive this particular cancer, because this pancreatic cancers are unfortunately notoriously poor in terms of their prognosis, just because they tend to be caught late.
Okay.
So if this was early, and I certainly hope so for your mom, that they are able to remove this and maintain the normal function and maintain those ducts that she needs in order to have proper functioning.
So if the surgery is successful, that means it's just a matter of recuperating from surgery and she could actually survive it?
She may need chemotherapy afterwards.
Okay.
She's gonna need a lot of vigilance in order to ensure that there's no recurrence, because she's still at risk of further tumors.
Okay.
But hopefully if they're able to resect this and able to keep that area open that is supposed to, you know, keep the liver connected and keep the ducts connected, that she should be okay. But again, you'll probably have the problem with cancer diagnoses is that it's a roller coaster, because you'll get some information and it'll seem like from that information that things are really bad. And then you get more information. You go, oh, it doesn't look as bad. Things look really up. So these questions are likely going to develop, and the answers are going to be more filled out over the next 2 to 3, 4 weeks or so.
Okay. So they don't actually do the operation on the end of the month when they're meeting. They just do they're going to check if her heart rate's okay.
Yes. Yeah. The pre-op is just to ensure that she's able to she is fit enough to deal with the surgery, the potential complications of surgery, the anesthesia that is going to be used, that her cardiac function and her kidney function are normal. And if they are, then she's cleared for surgery. But it is just a means of making sure that what they do in terms of treating her is not going to cause her so much harm that she can't survive the surgery.
And then the surgery itself, is it shortly afterwards, or is it still
Usually if they're dealing with a cancer, especially pancreatic cancer, what they likely will do is they're likely going to have rounds, or what's called morbidity rounds, where the surgeons and the oncologists get together. They review the information they have about the tumor, the location that it's in, and then they discuss what the best approach would be to treat this. So,
okay.
But usually that occurs very quickly afterwards.
Okay.
And I don't see your mom waiting very long at all after that's done to have the surgery, especially for pancreatic cancer. The quicker that they approach this, the better.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You answered all my questions.
You're very welcome, Sandra. Best of luck. Let us know what's happening.
I will. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And over to line 2, and good afternoon to David in Ottawa. Hi, David.
Hi there.
How are you?
Not too bad. Actually, my question to you is regarding nutrition.
Yes.
I have stage 4 colorectal cancer, mm-hmm. and I've had it for a year and a half, and I've responded very well, reduced sugar, and everything seems to be good. The prognosis is good.
Good.
Currently, I'm on a chemo holiday, as they call it, for 8 months. So.
Right.
That's how well I'm doing at this point. But an event. In the meantime, what I've done, I researched about sort of homeopathic ways of curing cancer, and which led me to go on a particular diet right now, mm-hmm. which is basically you've got to take roughly 8 vegetables or fruit per day.
Mm-hmm.
So I use one of these called the neutral. You know that zap quite a bit. You put in the morning, I have 5 fruits.
Yeah.
And I zap that and chug it down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a smoothie. And then
right.
in the afternoon, I do 5 vegetables, you know, all the high, like broccoli and spinach,
mm-hmm.
asparagus, the whole 9 yards. Now, I've been doing this daily now for the last month and a half. Now, I must admit, I feel much better myself.
I'm sure you do.
because I'm sure, you know, the poor diet has led to where I am now. But it seems like it's uplifting me and mm-hmm. I'm feeling better. You know, the side effects of chemo, as you know, they're
yes.
horrible. And especially constipation and stuff like that. But this cures all that. And it just simply makes you feel good. Now, I'm just thinking, I'm asking you this, can you
sure.
overdose on too much vegetables and too much fruit?
No, very unlikely that you're going to overdose on that. I think it's great that you're actually doing that, David, and your point is very well taken, that when you eat real food, you're going to feel much better. And indeed, a poor diet, especially diets that have a lot of meat, processed foods, do have an influence on colon cancers to a certain degree. In terms of the development of colon cancer. So your point is very well taken, and I would say keep doing that stuff. I mean, there's no reason why you should cut back on consuming fruits and vegetables in that way.
No, and it's a great way of doing it, because I would never in my life ever had five fruits in the morning and five vegetables in the day. There's no way.
Sure, especially if you make it...
The other thing, too, is the diet also says exclude red meat and dairy, which is what I've done. I mean, it's no big deal. You can have turkey, chicken...
Absolutely.
So really, but the whole thing is And pass it on to your listeners. The fact is that it can actually boost your immune system, and this is the whole point of it: boosting the immune system to help fight the cancer. Well, and so that's the reason I did it, because now on this holiday, I may as well do some more positive and try and attack it through my immune system.
Absolutely, David. Well, I wish you all the best in this. We have to break for the news, but thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All the best.
Okay, bye
bye now. And we are going to break to the news. Thanks to David. I would have wanted to talk a little bit longer. We got a break for the news. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back with your calls in just a couple of minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. I'm no Superman. The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. I'm about to lose my mind. You've been gone for so long. I'm running out of time. I need a 580 CFRA's Sunday House Call. Your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
Five two one talk 521-8255, *58 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372. Is our long distance number, and we're going to go back to the phone lines and say hello to Norma in Ottawa.
Norma?
Yes, hi Norma.
Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to get your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing an orthopedic surgeon now for osteoarthritis of one knee.
Okay.
And first of all, he has given me 2 cortisone injections, but they have not relieved the pain.
Right.
And so therefore, I see him this week he's given me folders on 2 different injection drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and he said one would be, I'd go once a week and get like a total of 3 injections.
Right.
The 2 drugs are?
Duralane and Synvisc.
One is Ostanil.
Yeah.
And then the other is Hyalgan.
Right. Yeah, these are the generic names of those 2 medications. And what this is called viscosupplementation. That visco refers to the thick, think of it as lubricating oil. And it's the oil that is normally produced in healthy joints to keep the joints lubricated. The cartilage that coats the bones and in the joints themselves produces this compound. When you have osteoarthritis, you lose that cartilage. It gets worn away. And when it gets worn away, the bones rub together. You don't have the lubrication anymore. And as a result, it becomes quite painful when you move the joint. So these particular products, one of them is given once a week for 3 weeks. The other one is just given once. They both do the same thing. They both have the same effect. They are expensive, though. They're in between $300 and $400 for the entire treatment.
Yes, I was told that.
Yeah, and the issue is to keep in mind that I've done this on, I have patients that we do this, and for some, it works very well. It gives them relief, pain relief in their knee for a year, sometimes a year and a half, but for others, it does absolutely nothing. So it's not a sure thing that if it's done, that it's going to give you that relief. If it's something to, it may be something you want to try, because if this doesn't work, then you're likely going to be, especially if your knee is not functioning very well and the osteoarthritis is relatively severe, they may then say, okay, we've tried everything conservatively in order to reduce any harm to the knee, but they may say that because none of this has worked, that the next step would be what's called an arthroplasty or a knee replacement.
I see.
So it really is a matter of, you have to weigh the fact that it's expensive, right? It's about $400.
Right.
And that it may or may not work. So if you're okay with trying it and saying, okay, if it doesn't work, at least I know I've done everything I possibly can before deciding on whether to do surgery or not, that's one way to look at it. If, on the other hand, you can't afford to lose $400 if it doesn't work, you may want to just say to the surgeon, okay, what other solutions do you have for me?
Now, luckily, I do have a medical plan which will pay 80%.
Oh, good, good.
Would I be wise to try one of these before, like now?
If the surgeon is recommending it, then obviously they've cleared you for having this procedure. So, because I can't recommend to someone to have something done if I haven't seen their own knee. But if you're saying that the surgeon has recommended this and given you a prescription for it, or said they'll give you a prescription for it, then certainly the surgeon is certainly well experienced to be able to give this to you and give that injection. It really only takes about 5 minutes to do. And in terms of a downside, the only downside, as with any injection into the knee, there's a very, 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 very tiny risk of infection at the site when you put the needle into the knee, sometimes pain afterwards. But otherwise, it's usually very well tolerated, and the procedure, again, is very straightforward to do. And it might be something you want to do just to see if it gives you relief. If it doesn't, again, at least you now know that you've done everything you possibly can to try and alleviate the knee pain, and then you're faced with the decision of potentially a knee replacement. But it acts as a good intermediary in order to help you make that decision.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Dworkin.
You're very welcome, Norma. And let us know what happens.
Oh, thank you. I will do that.
Okay. All the best. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long-distance number. And over to line 4, and a good afternoon to Dan in Arnprior.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Very pleased to be talking to you.
Well, likewise.
My situation's a little bit different.
Okay.
I have not glaucoma, but eye pressure in my eyes.
Okay.
I get to visit the doctor perhaps every 1 to 2 months, something like that. The last two occasions, the pressure was too high. They were very concerned, mm-hmm. and the number of prescriptions to resolve that has increased to 5.
Wow.
Dan,
you mind me asking, what diagnosis did they give you?
I have TED, thyroid eye disease. So the pressure is not internal to the eye, but it's from behind. So squeezing behind causes the pressure in the eye. What I find is that it's difficult to tell how much pressure you have.
Mm-hmm.
When it's extremely bad, you get sparkles, so you know it's extremely
mm-hmm.
bad. But there doesn't seem to be a system for monitoring it. I've had two experiences with, I'm not sure the term, ophthalmologists or
mm-hmm.
whatever, that
yep.
give you prescriptions for your eyeglasses?
That's optometrists. So that's different from ophthalmologists.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sure.
I knew two of them. I went into one and they said, oh yeah, sit down. You know, it only takes 30 seconds. They have the air puff and they
Correct.
Measured it and away you go. I went into another and they say, we have to contact your doctor and coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, make an appointment and come in, etc.
Right.
So I guess really my question is there any kind of a system or place that I can go to get fairly regular readings on my eye pressure so I don't run into trouble?
Yes, there is. And I just wanted to ask you another question, though. You said, so you have Graves' disease, you have a thyroid disorder that's doing this? Is that what they said?
As far as I can tell, what they call TED, thyroid eye disease and Graves' disease, I think are synonyms.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, are you being treated for the thyroid?
It's been tested. The thyroid is stable. It's chemically okay, but
okay.
That appears to be quite frequently the case.
All right. So ideally, what you would want to have done in order to have, especially with the pressures, and if they're that concerned with especially five different medications, you want to go to a place that has more than just the instruments for eye pressure. You want to be able to go to a place that actually will do a lot of other measurements, check the corneas, check the curvature of the corneas, the actual anatomy inside the eye, a lot more sophisticated equipment. And so one of the places to be referred to would be the Eye Institute here, because that's where you would get the best specialized care.
And that's where I go regularly.
Oh, you
However,
do?
It's
okay.
About every 2 months.
Right.
And I would look for something intermediate, maybe every week or two, to check the pressure. If I could have that done, it would give me some level of confidence that my prescriptions are working properly.
If it's just for the pressure,
yes.
Then, and just the pressure alone, then sure, the optometrist's office would be a place to go, because they have that device where they can measure your intraocular pressure. The other issue, though, is to... And it's actually a good question. I don't have the answer for it. Is how frequently does the pressure have to be monitored in order to be comfortable that it's not going to skyrocket in between the interval time? Mm-hmm. And that I don't have the answer to. That would be more for the ophthalmologist to answer, because a lot of times when they give a specific follow-up, especially when we have a condition and it's the eyes, so you want to be very careful about it. When you hear or you're told it's 2 months, and all they say is 2 months, but they don't give you the reasoning or the rationale, you start to wonder exactly and ask the question, the valid questions that you're asking, you know, is 2 months too long? Or is it rare to see eye pressures, especially if the thyroid is controlled, is it rare to see eye pressures just skyrocket one day and in between in that 2 month interval? And I don't have the answer for that. And that would be a good question to ask them, so that you have some peace of mind as well, because it can be quite disruptive to one's lifestyle if you have to go check every week and go and make appointments and do that, especially if the pressure doesn't change very much. And so I don't know the answer to those things, Dan, but I think it's worthwhile asking the ophthalmologist or even the optometrist that you go to and say, what is the evidence for measurement? What evidence is out there that will... provide me with the information so that I know that if it's every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks or every 8 weeks, that this is not going to cause me any harm over the long term.
Yes, and of course I'd love to be able to find out if there is some regular service that can be provided. I live
quite a distance from the Eye
Institute,
yeah.
And perhaps this finding a good eyeglasses shop with somebody in it that can do this. I don't believe it takes that much of a professional to take that reading.
No, for the optometrist, they should be able to measure your eye pressure without any difficulty. As long as they have the machine and they're all trained to use them, sure, that would give you the information.
Mm-hmm. So that's my best bet.
That would
not,
be the best
not
bet.
Not go to emergency and have
No, because it's an ongoing condition. It's not considered an emergency, and so they're not even going to bother calling the ophthalmologist to do the measurements.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to ask you to go to the optometrist to have it done.
Well, thanks for the information.
You're very welcome, Dan. All the best to you.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. And we're going to take a small break, and when we come back, we have a couple of callers waiting, and... I'll also tell you what this medicinal product was that I talked about at the beginning of the show that Dr. Yoni Fridoff posted on his website, Weighty Matters. And yeah, that's pretty much what we're going to do. We're going to take a small break and come back in just a couple of minutes. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in a couple of minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
Doctor, please, oh, the mess I'm
And back to the phone lines. And good afternoon to John in Canada. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin. Oh, I can't believe I'm actually talking to you. You're such a celebrity, I'm sure. I thank you very much for offering this service.
I put on pants like everybody else, John.
Oh, I appreciate so very much. What I'm calling about, I had actually Whipple surgery for pancreatic cancer in January 9th of 2012.
Okay.
If I really would have known it was so involved, sometimes I second guess if I should have got it done or anything. But the good news is that they got it all, and there was good margins around it. And theoretically, I am cancer-free, which is good.
That's fantastic, especially for pancreatic cancer, John.
It's really a tough surgery. It's a tough, and I'm glad. Like, I'm 47 now. Mm-hmm. If I would have waited longer, if, you know, who knows?
Well, it's just like Steve Jobs, right? He had pancreatic cancer.
He had the same one I did. Yeah. He had neuroendocrine. I was diagnosed in August, and he passed away a month or two later.
Yeah, and he waited. He wanted to treat it with natural
products
and stuff, and he waited too long. And had he had the surgery at the time that it was diagnosed, they're saying that he likely would have survived.
And the billions of money that he had and still didn't help him.
Nope.
Yeah. What I'm calling about is I am still in constant pain. It's been over a year now, 15 months since the surgery. I'm in constant pain. I can barely walk. I'm on extreme pain medicines like, Zytran is 400 milligrams and hydromorphine 10 milligrams. And I can barely walk, but they've done all kinds of CT scans, and they really can't find anything other than they did mention once about the an infarct of the omentum. Now, can you explain more what this thing is, and can it still be alive, still causing problems? Can it be removed?
Sure. The omentum is a lining of tissue that coats the intestines. It acts as a support structure to prevent your intestines from moving all over the place in your abdomen. And so if you were to open up the abdomen, you'll see this fatty layer and this thin membrane that is literally riding over each of the coils of the intestine. So that's what the omentum is. It sits in the abdomen, and it has a blood supply. And sometimes what happens is if an artery that runs to a part of the omentum gets blocked or damaged, you have no blood flow that results. And with no blood flow, the tissue that is dependent on this blood flow to stay alive will die. And so an omental infarction, we hear of things like myocardial infarction, which means a heart attack where the myocardium of the heart has no blood supply, and so that muscle will die. An omental infarction is the omental tissue has no blood supply, and it can also succumb and die. And it can be very painful when that happens. And there are ways to determine whether that has occurred. There are analyses of blood flow. They can sometimes do an angiogram of the abdominal circulatory system to see if there is any blockages. They may do what's called a nuclear scan, where if there is any tissue that is damaged or inflamed, it would show up on the scan afterwards. So there are a few approaches to be able to make that determination if they're thinking about that. But that is what an omental infarction is, and it can be quite painful. There are several main arteries that come off the aorta, which is the largest blood vessel in your body. One is called the superior mesenteric artery. The other is called the inferior mesenteric artery. These are the main arteries that will come off and supply blood to the omentum. And so they can follow these arteries and see if there's been any specific blockage along the way, just as they do for the heart, where they look at the coronary arteries to see if there's any blockages. So those are some of the approaches to try to make that determination if there's been an omental infarction.
Well, thank you ever so much.
Now, what else are you doing for your pain, John? Like, what other things are they using to try and help?
Tried Lyrica
as
a see if there's any nerve endings because of that one. But I think that's basically it. I do have a list of them, but
Now, are they still working up this for the omental infarction? Are they going to be doing anything to look into that?
Or? They have nothing. I've been referred to the pain clinic.
Huh. And this happened obviously after your surgery.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is obviously a complication of the surgery.
Yeah.
But they don't know why. Is it widespread in the abdomen where you're having this pain, or?
Yeah, it's the whole area.
Oh man. Right. Have they done any? I guess the question I would ask is: Are they planning to do anything else? If they mentioned a mental infarction, are they planning to?
They have not planned to do anything. The difference was, like, the surgeons really didn't know what it is, and weren't sure. But I was back in the hospital because of pain, and the general surgeon at the emergency ward mentioned this, that it was an infarct. And it was like we went back to the surgeons, and the surgeons just sort of discounted. And I don't understand, because all the CT scans are clear otherwise.
Right. Well, you know, John, the other thing that you can do is you can certainly ask your family doctor for to be sent to another surgeon for another opinion.
That would be great.
Yeah.
But every time I met, like, the surgeons here right now, they referred to the unit here in Ottawa, right?
Yeah. The other alternative is if you're sort of in limbo because they all refer you back to the same people.
Yeah.
You may want to be referred to somewhere. It may be a bit of a hassle, but you may want to be referred to either somebody in Toronto or at another unit altogether, a different hospital in a different city in Ontario, just to get a fresh perspective.
That would be a great idea.
Because
I'll take that under great consideration.
Yeah, because again, if they're not offering you any solutions, and
yes.
And you're having pain because of the surgery. You know, it also could be, you know, it could be a nerve plexus that's damaged in there. There's a whole host of things that could give you this kind of pain. Adhesions can do that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're scarring, a Whipple procedure is quite involved, and you can get adhesions that can be causing that pain. So I you're 47. I think you deserve to have a second opinion if you're not getting one.
Well, thank you ever so much.
You're very welcome,
I really
John.
Appreciate it, Dr. Barry Dorgan.
Okay.
Thank
all
you very
the
much.
Best, John.
Take
Bye-bye
care.
Now.
Bye.
And that about wraps up our show. My thanks to Sebastian Tremblay for producing Sunday House Call. Once again, thank you so much for your questions. Oh, yes. And the name of that product, believe it or not, is Nesquik Plus. It's a chocolate syrup for milk, and they're selling it on the shelves as if it's medication for your children. Thank you so much, Nestle, for making another wonderful product for us to be consuming and giving to our kids. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call. You have been listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back next week with another edition. Have a great week.
Sunday House Call is presented by Robillard Hearing Centers. Hearingisbelieving.com.